But we've got our next guest on online to talk more about this. And we have Dr. Daniel Weisberg. Now, Dr. Weisberg is a highly specialized child clinical psychologist and the managing director of KAYP Psychology, a psychological healthcare service for children, adolescents, and young people. Peace and blessings be upon you, Dr. Weisberg. Thank you for joining us on the Drive Time Show.
Thank you so much for having me. It's a bit of a mouthful introducing me like that, but thank you very much for
that. Well, we like to give our guests their full moniker, right? So we're talking about drugs as an issue for parents. Are we as parents naive to the threat and the drugs pose for our children, right? I mean, what proactive measures can parents take to create an open, supportive environment for actually discussing drugs with their children? I mean, runners are saying, yeah, you can't just come out, look, I'm going to discuss drugs tonight. So how do we broach that subject?
Great question. And actually, your conversations, the whole conversation so far has been brilliant. And I think you've been talking about some really fascinating concepts, especially this one, because you're right, you can't just suddenly one day just say, oh my gosh, we need to talk about drugs and expect the conversation to be absolutely fine. It has to almost be introduced. And I think that you use two words here that I think are really important. The first is proactive, and the second is open, you know, an open environment. And you have to build these up. And that's by building trust and communication at home. So we want the household to be a foundation of trust. You want to be able to talk about things without that judgment. You were saying just before I came on about don't double negatives there.
I know, I said that myself.
try not to say just it's forbidden, you can't do it. And because by just ruling it out, you're essentially stopping your children from feeling comfortable with talking about things. And I've always been of the view that it's much better to talk about not so nice things in a very non-judgmental, open, caring environment, rather than completely banning it and saying we don't talk about it. It's absolutely a terrible thing to be thinking about at all. And inevitably, children may, I'm not saying everybody, but children may then explore and experiment, but this time behind your back and not talk to you. And that's a much worse place to be. So having that trust and communication is important. I also really love using positive reinforcement, which is rewarding the good behaviors, rewarding good choices. So when children do avoid certain things, or children do tell you and open up about very private matters, reward it. And when I say reward, it doesn't have to be something materialistic. Reward it with your attention and your praise and your kind words. And I think that absolutely, it goes so far to say, I'm so proud of you. And if you can then, that then lays the foundations to then start talking about these things, which is when we can then introduce concepts like critical thinking. You know, how we can do this as adults. If someone gives you some information, we don't just take that information and just run with it. We think about it. So when it comes to children who have been told information about taking drugs, like a friend says, oh, take this, it's going to be great for you.
It's not going to hurt. You're not going to get addicted.
Exactly. And like, so if you take it on face value, well, maybe that's true. But we want children to start thinking, is that the whole picture? Maybe there's something more behind this. We can help them think about potential consequences. What does it mean? How do you make informed choices when you're only given part of the picture, especially when part of that picture is peer pressure, which makes it very difficult for children to manage?
So what role does early intervention play in preventing or addressing drug-related issues in children and adolescents?
Oh, it's another brilliant question. So the early intervention side is absolutely key here. So it fits into what we know about prevention rather than treatment. So early intervention helps to prevent problems from getting worse or even happening in the first place, rather than us being too late down the line and then having to fix it, essentially. So that early intervention can help us to identify risk factors. You know, we can identify things that go a little bit wrong. We know when we can help children think about family histories and mental health difficulties, peer pressure. Is there a history in the family that we need to be aware of that we can help to manage and overcome? Can we help children build coping skills. How do we manage stress? It doesn't have to be stress about drugs. It can be stress about anything. Mm-hmm. If we're stressed about an upcoming exam or a football game or something, if we can teach children to manage their emotions, to talk about those emotions, to manage their difficult feelings without them reverting to something bad like dangerous behavior or potentially even drugs, well, that's a brilliant strategy to help children learn.
Yeah, because one of the things that just occurred to me, Dr. Weisberg, was that, you know, drugs per se, they're inanimate, right? There's nothing good or bad about them. It's just the way that you use them. And so, say, for instance, in my head, I was like thinking of the example of maybe, and you mentioned it, stress. Okay. So you might have adolescent kids, maybe kids, they're at university, they're away at university. So they're away from the family home. You don't have one-to-one contact with them until they want to get their clothes cleaned or something like that, right? So, you know, and they have their own stress. You know, they're getting ready for exams or they're doing, you know, they're putting in some essay. They might have their own colleagues, you know, their own fellow students, right? Saying, look, I'm taking these, you know, caffeine supplements or whatever it may be, right? Just to keep me up, just to keep me on edge so I can get through that work. You know, how, and that's almost like you're saying, I say drugs, but whatever they're taking is for a positive outcome. It's not just for, you know, just feeling high, getting that dopamine fix. It's, you know, there is a raison d'etre for taking it. How do you, you know, how do you address that?
Yeah, absolutely. And it's a brilliant example. But it's that's what I would call a fake short-term fix. Mm-hmm. Because that doesn't help to resolve the problems. It's almost just trying to deal with the surface level difficulty, which is I'm exhausted, I'm really stressed out, I just need something to help me through it. And if we're starting to do that in teenagehood or later adolescence, university age, well, what messages is that going to teach us for the rest of our life? Mm. Life is stressful, mm-hmm. life is difficult, and we want to find more helpful ways of managing. Mm-hmm. Maybe taking that pill is fine and it helps you get through that moment, but I would argue that's not the most helpful way of managing with that. Mm-hmm. Maybe we need to find more supportive ways of dealing with the stress, which would go back to what you were saying before. Is there some sports we can do, some mm-hmm. activities? Maybe actually I need a break from all of this. Mm-hmm. And perhaps more adaptive ways of coping and more helpful ways
some
building that into children's life. Mm. Yeah, exactly.
So, I mean, how can, you know, parents strike that balance then? Because it will be a tricky balance between, you know, fostering that trust mm-hmm. and maintaining boundaries when it comes to monitoring, you know, what their activities and what maybe potentially, you know, drug use there may be.
Yeah. I'm glad you brought this up, actually, because monitoring is something that we talk about quite a lot, especially with parents of teenagers and young adults. Mm. So I think it's really helpful to know what our children are up to, but you can't just expect to be told everything, and equally you can't just look at what they're doing with no consequences. There has to be that balance, and I think if we have in a household very clear expectations for what our boundaries are, what our expectations are, and it's a very open, communicative household, we're in a brilliant position to introduce something like monitoring, which is saying, I think it's important for us to be looking at what you're doing and looking at who you're talking to and making sure that you're safe. Mm-hmm. If we explain to children that as a parent, we're not particularly interested in what you're talking about, mm-hmm. we're more interested in who you're talking to and mm-hmm. are you safe whilst doing that. So it's not about trust, and it's not about we don't believe you or we don't trust you to do your own things.
Yeah, it's just more about making personal sure that security,
you're safe.
Right?
Completely. Yeah. And that is so important to say. And also to say that this isn't a lifetime punishment for you. We're not going to be watching everything you're doing for the rest of your life. Now, when you're a youngster, we just want to make sure everything's safe. But as you get older, you demonstrate to us that you are responsible and that you can be more independent and that we can trust you, then we'll tone down that monitoring. You can do things yourself, and we're here if you need to talk to us.
How would you adjust that kind of, because that's a real long term, and you have to be there right at the inception, right, of your kids to institute this type of gradual monitoring and lessening of the monitoring as they get older. But say, for instance, you've never monitored them because you've believed them, but now they've flown the coop, right? They're away at university. I'm saying this because my boys are away at university.
Right.
So how, because I can see the arguments coming, or not arguments, but how they would kind of like rally against this, like, oh, you're intruding into my personal space. What's all that about? Yeah. You know, I'm my own person. What, don't you trust me? So it's those things that they throw back at you, right? And how as a parent, do you adjust your strategy in monitoring to accommodate that?
Yeah, that is a very difficult question. In fact, it taps into why the numbers of young people who use Facebook as a social media platform have declined over the years, because youngsters know that their parents are on it and find it really embarrassing that they use it. But that's an important point. You can't suddenly, you know, now that they've left the house, or they're in a different part of the country and you're trying to keep tabs on what's going on, that's really difficult. But it comes back to that open communication, that I'm still here, you can talk to us. If anything's wrong, you're welcome to come and talk to me, and it's not judgmental. We're not here to punish you, we're here to support you. I would say it's about education rather than interrogation. We want to share that knowledge, share that relationship, keep an open relationship going, but not in a punishing, detrimental, judgmental way.
So what resources or support systems are available for parents who may feel overwhelmed or uncertain about addressing drug related issues with their children?
There is lots out there. Dr. Nadim, who spoke before, gave a couple of good examples, actually. There is a lot out there. The one thing that I would say be very careful of is typing into Google, "my child using cannabis" or something like that, because the first few pages that you'll see will be message boards, like boards on Reddit or Mumsnet, and that's often totally unregulated forums of parents who are potentially, quite understandably, worried and panicked, but often you're not getting the most valid, up-to-date information. You want to be looking for those well-researched, well-structured websites. So, like NHS websites give you loads of information. The charities specifically about drugs and alcohol are really helpful. But also talking to teachers and professors and your GPs is really helpful, as well as looking through books and apps and even support groups that might be local to you. So there is a lot out there. Sometimes you do have to do a bit of research to find what's out there. But if you're finding things difficult, don't be alone and reach out. There is support out there.
So as a final question, Dr. Weisberg, right, what if, you know, you've done your best and then you notice, because we were saying earlier on in the topic, you know, how to notice if your child has become addicted, right, to substance abuse of any sorts. You know, they're a bit withdrawn, they're a bit bedraggled, you know, some of the things that Dr. Nadine was saying earlier on. So say, you know, if in the worst case scenario you do notice that your child, your teenager has, you know, maybe developed an addiction, how do you address that then?
If you do see some changes, you notice something's different, or you're just concerned, that gut feeling as a parent, if you just feel something isn't quite right,
she's not right,
absolutely, then raise it. But if you just launch into, oh gosh, you look terrible, something must be wrong, you're probably going to be met with, oh, it's so embarrassing, Dad, go away, sort of thing. And the conversation will just end there. It's more about that gentle introduction of, you know, it looks like things are a bit difficult. I can see you're upset. We're here if you want to talk about anything. I've in the past just left a leaflet. I left it in the reception area of our clinic, actually. So this was with a young person who just didn't want to talk about anything, but we could see that there was something going on. I just left a couple of relevant leaflets just where I knew they would see them, didn't say anything, and then they were taken, that young person took them. So he was sort of gradually introducing this idea of saying there is support out there without it being so in your face, if you will.
And, and you know, having fingers point, you know, being judgmental, I suppose. Excellent.
Yeah,
well, Dr. Weisberg, it's been a pleasure talking to you this afternoon. Really informative. Thank you very much for joining us on the Drive Time Show.
I appreciate you having me. Thanks so much for bringing this topic up.
Thank you. Have a good afternoon. Well, good evening by now. Okay, thank you. Bye-bye. 0208 687 787.